Today on the What's Up ABQ podcast, water, H2O, agua, an essential substance for life. Think of all the ways we use water. Here in the high desert, water is always a concern. But our guest today is literally an authority on water here in Albuquerque. You'll hear what he considers two new sources of water to sustain life in the Duke City for years down the road. Let's dive into this pool of information here on What's Up ABQ.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Lindsay.
This is Lorenzo.
And this is What's Up ABQ.
What's up Albuquerque, this is Lorenzo.
And this is Lindsay, and today we have with us
David Morris.
So David, tell us where we are. We have a great view, by the way, and I always say that even though people can't see anything on the podcast. But we are sitting in City Hall with a really nice view of Civic Plaza. So tell us where specifically we are today.
We are in the administrative offices of the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority. We rent space in City Hall, but we're actually a separate entity from the city. The Water Authority is essentially the city's old water department that was broken off and made into a separate entity by the legislature circa 2004.
Oh, wow. So that's interesting. So the water department of the city of Albuquerque was broken up and now it's separate. Wow. Okay.
So I don't know about, like, you, Lorenzo. I'm sure you know more than I do. In fact, I would almost guarantee it. Tell us a little bit about the Water Authority and what you do for the city. Going into this as somebody who doesn't know a lot about your function or your primary function for the city, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, primarily, we provide water and sewer service to the metro area, the incorporated areas of Albuquerque, and also some unincorporated areas of Bernalillo County. Also, we provide did I say water and sewer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So we got water on one side, sewer on the other, and so we administer both of those systems. Mm-hmm. And there's a few thousand miles of pipeline for both water and sewer systems running underneath our feet here in the city and out in the county. And that infrastructure needs to be maintained. In some cases, it needs to be extended. So we're responsible for that. And we're responsible also for making sure that there's enough water to meet the demand of the community.
So that's quite the feat, I would say. That's something that as a resident, like most people don't think about every day, is how much infrastructure is in place, like how many pipes are underneath our feet, like you said. So I was wondering a little bit more about the details of that. You said thousands of miles of pipes. I mean, I imagine for every household, you have to have sewer and water connected. And how many miles did you say that was?
You know, I could get you the exact number, but it's about 2,500 miles of sewer and 3,000 miles of water pipe. Either that or those are reversed. Those numbers are in the ballpark anyway.
Wow. So this might be kind of an ignorant question because I don't know, but where, I don't want to say Albuquerquean, but as a New Mexican, where do we get our water for the city of Albuquerque? Where does it come from?
Well, in Albuquerque, we're fortunate. We have two sources of drinking water. The one source is the underground aquifer, which the community relied on for decades, exclusively on the underground aquifer. And then in the mid-1990s, it became apparent that that aquifer was under a lot of stress. It was being depleted at a much higher rate than it was being replenished, which was not what people originally thought was happening. Everyone thought, well, it's being recharged on a constant basis from the river, but it really wasn't happening. That turned out to be kind of wishful thinking. So when we found out that the aquifer was not as robust a source of supply as we originally thought, we said, well, what about surface water? Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I'm giving a little history here, but back in the early 60s, the city government at the time, I believe it was a city commission at the time, contracted with the federal government to obtain water from what was then just a plan for what was called the San Juan Chama Project, which brings water from tributaries of the Colorado River south through a series of tunnels and channels, rivers and reservoirs to Albuquerque. And it had been coming down since probably since the early 70s. Mm-hmm. The water had been coming down, but it was just passing by the city, running through the river, and we weren't using it. Mm-hmm. And when the aquifer situation arose, leadership of the city said, well, why don't we tap into that surface water that we've been paying for, but we haven't been using?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. So I'm a little bit curious about the first part of your history. There was the aquifer. What is an aquifer? Like, for those that may not know, I mean, I have a general idea. It's an underground pocket of water, I imagine. And how is it that the city or the water authority measures to find the health of the aquifer? Like, how was that discovered? And what is it? What is an aquifer?
Well, an aquifer, it's basically, like you said, an underground reservoir of water. Typically, there's different kinds of aquifers, but it's not just like a big cavern with a lake in it. It's saturated soil and rocks where the water exists in the spaces in between the rocks and the soil. And we're fortunate. We do have a very good aquifer here with very high quality water. And as far as understanding the health of the aquifer, that's the domain of geologists. I don't know how they do it, but they're able to, they use monitoring wells and other techniques to determine the level of the groundwater that's in the aquifer. Mm-hmm. And so how high the aquifer is in terms of the water level, the water table, helps them determine how well the aquifer's doing in terms of the amount of water there that's available to use.
So the Water Authority, I imagine, has a pretty close relationship with those geologists to determine the health of the aquifer. Is that true?
Close relationship. I don't know if I would put it that way, but we do projects with the United States Geological Survey, and to help us monitor the health of the aquifer, we contract with them for studies and things, and they definitely contribute immensely to our understanding of the health of the aquifer.
Mm-hmm. So the aquifer, we don't really tap into that as much as we used to. We still have the availability to, I guess, is that?
Absolutely. It's a dual system now. We use both groundwater and surface water. The objective is to maximize our use of surface water so that we can preserve the groundwater as a drought reserve for times when there's less surface water available.
Right.
So in a good year, our usage is about 70% surface water and 30% groundwater. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that will flip if we're in a drought or we had a situation like several years ago, there was a pretty bad fire. Mm-hmm. And a lot of debris and ash came down the river, and we weren't able to divert, so things like that happen where we're not able to divert surface water, or there's just not enough to divert. And in those cases, we depend more heavily on the aquifer. But like I said, we're very fortunate. We have both of those systems that we can draw upon.
Wow. How does the process work for, and this is, again, maybe like a really juvenile question, but I don't know. How does water get from where it's coming from, groundwater, the aquifer, to your tap? What's the process?
Well, as far as the groundwater is concerned, we have a number of wells all over the community. I can't remember how many are active right now. At one point, there was about 100. I think there's... Mm-hmm. It's fewer than that now. But anyway, there's wells all over the community that tap into the aquifer. That water is pumped to the surface, and then it is sent to reservoirs around the community. You see these big putty-colored tanks around town. Those are the storage reservoirs for the water. Sometimes there's a well on site. Sometimes the water's been pipe there from a well. But anyway, the water is stored there and then is distributed via a gravity system. That's what provides the pressure. So the reservoir is uphill from the neighborhoods that it serves.
Oh, okay.
And as far as the surface water goes, the groundwater doesn't require much treatment at all. It comes out of the ground. You'd be able to drink it like from a spring. But because it's going through pipes and things that are exposed to the environment, we treat it with we chlorinate it for disinfection purposes, but that's really all we do. And we put in some fluoride, but that's all the treatment it needs. The surface water, it comes down the river and we divert it at a facility over near the Alameda Bridge. And it's actually pumped from there uphill to a treatment plant that has a multi-step process for treating the water so that it is drinkable. And it's a much more involved process because this is really dirty. It's not like contaminated like with industrial waste, but it's really dirty. You can't drink that water right out of the river.
Don't.
Yeah. So that would be ill-advised. So it requires quite a robust treatment process. And then once it's treated and it's drinkable, then we just put it into the same distribution system that handles the groundwater.
Yeah.
Okay. This is all really interesting to me. So Albuquerque, our topography is pretty unique. We have the river valley where the elevation is about 5,000, and then you got the foothills where the elevation of the residences are about 6,000. And you mentioned that it's a gravity systems, and that makes sense. Like you have the reservoir that's maybe on a hill and it'll feed, but the groundwater you pump that up, is the treatment plant, does it have to be high up and then from there it's then fed with the gravity system, or how does that water get to homes? Is it also pumped?
Yes, it has to be pumped to where it needs to go. It'll be pumped to the various reservoirs from the treatment plant.
Okay,
that makes sense. So the
gravity feed system is really for that's what you're seeing when it comes out of the tap. That pressure that allows that water to come through your shower and your sink, that's all done via gravity.
Now I want to know where ours is because we have really bad water pressure.
That might be our house too. I'm not sure, but I think we live in Northeast Albuquerque, and I have no idea. Yeah,
we aim to achieve a certain range of pressure for all customers. So if you've got a problem, you can always give us a call. We'll go out and check it for you to make sure you're within the...
See, Lorenzo?
There you go.
There you go.
The approved range.
Yeah, so we have that.
I'd like to file a complaint.
And it does vary depending on how far away you are from the from the tank.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a good thing if that water pressure is low because, like, well, you know, I'll start the washing machine and then we'll have our sink tap on and then the shower's on. You know, we can be wasting a lot of water.
So maybe a 5-person household.
Yeah.
So that actually brings me to kind of a practical question. What are some water tips that you would like people to know about that maybe they don't know, or maybe that would help them as a member of the community just conserve water or, you know, just kind of deal with their water better?
Well, we have a big education program that attempts to disseminate this kind of information to the public, and the city before us and then the Water Authority has been doing that, sending that conservation message out as best we can for the last, you know, 30 years or so. I think it is, so to speak, trickling down into the community. I think the message is getting out there. A couple of the biggest things you can do if you want to save water, if you still have an older toilet, one that's not the low flow 1.5 gallons per flush, replacing those, you can save a lot of water in your house. We used to have a rebate program for that, but we basically have almost taken care of all the people who want to replace their toilets and get a rebate, pretty much have done so. But if you still have that kind of toilet, replacing it, you can save a lot of water that way. If you have older appliances, getting water smart appliances in there for your dishwasher and your clothes washer, also a good way to save water. And then one of the biggest ways, of course, is to replace turf grass areas of your yard with xeriscape landscapes, what we call desert-friendly landscapes. And about 40% of our water consumption here in Albuquerque is outdoor use for irrigating landscapes. So there's a lot of potential there still for savings. And we offer $2 per square foot rebate for replacement of turf with desert-friendly xeriscaping. You need to get in touch with us first before you start ripping out grass, because we need to pre-approve your plan, because it requires a certain amount of vegetation to be planted to replace the grass. We didn't want, as part of the rebate program, we wanted to make sure we weren't encouraging people to just rip out their yards and just put in gravel, which a lot of people did anyway. But if you want the rebate, you've got to play by certain rules.
Definitely. Yeah, and there's some really beautiful desert plants that I think accent a yard. And, you know, the natural New Mexico landscape, I think, is really pretty. So, that makes me wonder, too. It must be a metric that the Water Authority tracks as far as, like, how much usage per maybe resident or household. Is that something that's tracked, and how is that compared with other maybe Southwest desert cities? Are we pretty good at conserving water, or where is our usage?
Well, the main indicator that we use is, we call gallons per person per day, GPCD, the per capita usage in the community, which in the mid 1990s, before the conservation program started, was at about 250 gallons per person per day. And that includes all usage. So it's all industrial and institutional usage and everything, and then just divided by the population. So that's not necessarily what...
Like one individual human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, that's how we calculate it. Mm-hmm. So it was about 250 in the mid-90s, and now we're down to about 127. Hmm. So we've cut it essentially in half over the past 25, 30 years or so. And as far as conservation goes, I don't have any direct comparisons top of mind with other communities, but I do know that we've been recognized nationwide and even internationally for our conservation program. We've really done a good job here of cutting back on our use. And in fact, our usage, our overall usage, in spite of population growth, is about the same as it was in the mid to late 80s.
Wow, that's surprising. Yeah. I guess education, you know, those things are making gains, and that's progress there. That's great. Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering that too, because, you know, we travel a bit, and, we've got some family in Phoenix, and I'm thinking, I'm driving Phoenix, and Phoenix gets much hotter than Albuquerque, and I'm looking around, and I see lawns everywhere, golf courses everywhere. I'm like, how do you guys do this? Because in Albuquerque, we, you know, some people have lawns, but a lot of people have xeriscaping, and we don't have near as many golf courses. But I don't know where I was going with that. It was just an observation.
I can see the wheels turning. We're getting off into a tangent.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to me, like desert cities, we know the water's scarce, but we still use it. But I mean, I'm glad to hear that Albuquerque's doing great with that. But yeah.
Some communities are definitely more conservation oriented than others, and in some cases it has to do with, you know, the availability of water. I think Phoenix, they're tied into a federal program that basically provides them with subsidized water for the community, and I think that has an impact on usage, but I don't know enough about it to get into detail.
Right.
But places like Las Vegas, you know, obviously, you know, they're using a lot of water, and even communities like that now, because of the issues with the Colorado River, are having to take a hard look at how they're using that resource.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wanted to quickly circle back around to the San Juan Chama project that you were kind of telling us about, and you kind of talked about it a little bit off mic, but what is the projection kind of and the goal for that project going forward?
Ultimately, if I'm not mistaken, we want to get our per capita usage that I mentioned before down to about 110 gallons per person per day. So that's our long-term goal. But that's, you know, we've given ourselves, I, think, another 20 or 30 years to reach that point. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an incremental process. And in terms of the San Juan Chama project, we're already meeting the project's goals in terms of how much we are using versus groundwater. Like I said, it varies from year to year, but we're definitely reaching the objectives that were set when the project was first conceived. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're doing great as far as meeting the objectives of the project. We're seeing that the effects of that in the aquifer itself, mm-hmm. which has risen by as much as 50 feet or more in some places around town following the implementation of the San Juan Chama project, which we started actually using the surface water in 2008, so however many years ago that is. And over that relatively short period of time, we've seen a really impressive rebound in the aquifer. It's very encouraging.
That is great. So, yeah, I definitely want to read more in this packet, and I imagine is this accessible on the website, too, a lot of this information about the San Juan Chama?
I hope so.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll link whatever resources we can get, but do you want to take a quick break?
Yeah, we'll take a quick break, okay. And we'll be right back.
All right.
Merch, short for merchandise. You see it, you need it, you want to show it off, especially if it's showing off your New Mexico pride, right? Well, the What's Up ABQ store has it, and it's ready to put on any space, any face, or any face. Just slip over to whatsupabq.com and click the merch tab above the podcast player. There you'll discover all the accessories, stickers, clothing, and drinkware with a New Mexico flair that you can ever want. Come on, you don't need that new toothbrush anyway, do you? Pick up some merch now at whatsupabq.com.
Okay, we're back.
We are back, and we kind of wanted to talk about the sewer water reclamation and that process as well. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of how that works within the city of Albuquerque.
Well, obviously, we turn on our faucet, we use the water, we flush our toilet. That water has to go somewhere. And fortunately, we have a sewer system that is capable of taking that wastewater and everything in it mm-hmm. to a single location where it is treated through a near miraculous process
yeah.
of both mechanical and biological processes and turned back into water that is clean enough to put in the river, and it can go downstream and be used again.
Yeah, that's a pretty incredible thing too, because I think about all of the stuff that goes down our drains, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're washing clothes, you're using detergents and fabric softeners and these different chemicals we use to clean our clothes, and the same thing with your dishwasher. You have, you know, the rinse aid and the detergent and your shampoos and conditioners and soaps. And
well, and not to mention biological things, like people take medications, they use the restroom. I mean, there's right. so much going into yeah. the water.
And I remember I was listening to a podcast a little while back, and somebody was mentioning that in like cities that have older infrastructure, like New York, they don't have garbage disposals in their sink. It's just expected that whatever you have on your plates, you throw it in the trash. And here in Albuquerque, I don't know if I've been to a house that doesn't have a garbage disposal on your food disposal, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's really interesting and fascinating to me that all of that water is then going to a plant. And can you talk a little bit more about that process and, you know, how that works? I mean, does all that water go back into the river, and is it without any consequences, I guess? That's well, a lot.
Well, obviously,
it's like a five-pronged question.
Yeah. Well, the water, say, that you put on your lawn or water mm-hmm. a plant with or, mm-hmm. Is not going into the sewer system. Hmm. But all the water that goes down the drain does end up at the reclamation plant. Mm-hmm. And it is a concern for us what things go down the drain besides water and sewage.
Something I was going to ask is what should not go down the drain?
Yeah, I mean, that could be something, yeah, yeah.
Right, so the main thing that we discourage people from doing is putting what we call fats, oils, and grease down the drain, because those things can accumulate, and solidify and turn into blockages in the sewer system, which can cause overflows, which you don't want to have for public health reasons. Mm-hmm. And so fats, oils, and grease, and also even so-called flushable wipes and trash and things like that. We ask people not to use their toilets as a trash can.
Right.
Just toilet paper. Even so-called flushable wipes usually aren't by our standards because those things also can accumulate. They don't disintegrate the way toilet paper does. So you can end up with log jams of rags and stuff in the sewer. So we don't like that.
So we were talking about consequences as far as the water going back into the river. And I think during the break, we were kind of talking a little bit about that. Can you kind of recap for us?
Well, when the water goes back into the river, if we've done our job properly at the plant, the water meets standards set by the Environmental Protection Agency. And it's a very high standard for us, partly because we have the downstream, I believe it's Isleta Pueblo, and they use the river for ceremonial purposes, and they want that water to be as clean as possible. Definitely. And so we make it as clean as possible, and that usually no problem. But if there's a breakdown in the system at the plant, sometimes you can have discharges of things that violate our permit with the EPA. Fortunately, that doesn't happen very often, and we've been able to go, I believe, years at a time without having any violations. We've gotten better and better at it as we've made improvements to that plant, which I think was originally built in around 1961.
Oh, wow.
And so we're actually getting toward the end of a 10-year, $250 million rehab project to bring that plant up to standards, reduce the amount of odors that it produces, make it more efficient, and make it less likely to fail in terms of putting water that doesn't meet the permit back into the river.
How does the Water Authority prepare for things like growth within the city? You know, Albuquerque's population is getting a little bigger. I don't know how much or how quickly, but we're growing. How do you guys prepare for something like that?
Well, I think that's a very important part of what we do is plan for the future in terms of ensuring that there's an adequate water supply to meet the demands of growth. And so that's one of the reasons why the San Juan Chama project is so important. Being able to use that surface water and save the groundwater as a drought reserve, very important component of our long-term planning. That's the foundation. And then two of the other things that we're going to be expanding our use of are reuse, recycling of water. That water I was describing that goes down to the reclamation plant, the sewage treatment plant, that water, and some of it already is being recycled to be used on parks and golf courses, other kinds of landscaping. Right now, it's mainly in the southeast quadrant of town. That's the closest proximity to the actual plant. But our long-term plans include creating satellite plants for reuse, reclamation in different places around town. The first one we expect will be near the Bosque School over there near Montaño, where it crosses the river. That's probably the first of the reuse satellite plants that we'll construct. And so the idea is to just keep increasing the amount of water that we reuse, because the more that we reuse, that's less drinking water that we have to use for purposes of irrigation.
Is there a limit to where Albuquerque can grow, where after the Chama San Juan project, we have to start thinking about other sources, or is this project going to cover us in our projected growth as a city?
Well, the reuse, you know, we look at things like reuse and also taking surface water and storing it rather than just sending it down the river if we don't need it right that minute. We're looking at, it's called aquifer storage and recovery, where we take that excess surface water and we just store it underground so we can use it later. So doing that and reuse, we consider those to essentially new sources of water that we can tap into as we expand those systems. It's going to take time and a lot of investment, but those are the two main ways we're looking at expanding our supply as we continue with conservation and trying to ensure that we're using what we do have as efficiently as possible.
So are there some systems in the nation that have reclaimed water that goes back into the system as drinkable water? I mean, is that technology available?
Yes. In fact, at some point, we may look at doing something like that here. It would be decades down the road. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to worry about it at this point.
Calm down.
But there are communities that are already doing it. Mm-hmm. I believe San Diego mm-hmm. is one. I think Big Spring, Texas. Those are two that spring to mind mm-hmm. if you want to do any further research.
This guy probably will.
I mean, I will. I'll take it to the lab, as we call it. But
yeah. The technology exists where you could basically send it straight from the reclamation plant to the water distribution system, which is called direct potable mm-hmm. reuse. What we would probably do is have some kind of intermediary storage of the water, maybe probably underground, so that there's a buffer in terms of time and geography, and that's called indirect potable reuse.
Oh. Yeah, I imagine there has to be a huge education campaign, and you have to get public buy-in for that, because, I mean, you think about... I mean, that would be something that you'd
have to... get people on board.
Yeah.
But I understand it was quite a... Like San Diego, mm-hmm. they really undertook quite a public education process. Right. And they really... You really have to get buy-in so people understand. This is safe, and it's also necessary.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Safe and necessary.
If we start doing the research now, you know, people kind of get comfortable with the idea now, maybe further mm-hmm. down the line, we'll be okay.
Yeah, that's why we're talking about it.
Right? Yeah. That's right.
We want people to understand that this is... You know, this mm-hmm. is a long-term possibility.
Definitely. And water, our precious resource, is not infinite. So,
And when you think about it, I mean, we're already drinking recycled water. Right. That water came from upstream and with the water, you know, the surface mm-hmm. water that we drink. And in some cases went through a community that mm-hmm. used some of it and then put it back into the... Yeah. Into the river.
Yeah. Texas? And, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, Texas is downstream.
Yeah, you're right.
So they'll take our reclaimed water.
Yes. We're fortunate.
All
we're,
the water, right?
We're sending ours down to them. So.
Yeah. But you think about it, too, like if you even zoom out further, water, you know, that water on Earth is a closed system. So, you know, water that we're drinking now could have been, who knows where it's been, you know. So,
that's right. The dinosaur might have
drank. Right, exactly.
Our 11-year-old would get really excited about that idea. Mm-hmm. All right. So... There's one more pivotal question, very important question. Lorenzo.
The most important question.
Yeah, always.
Red or green?
Green. No, wait, red. No, definitely red.
Red chili. I'm with you on that, red chili.
So if you're going to go anywhere in town to get a red chili fix, where do you go?
Oh, my favorite place has always been, gosh, over by the airport. I've been there since before COVID, though.
Is it Cervantes?
Cervantes, yes. I love Cervantes.
You get a lot of love on this podcast. Yeah, I've noticed. It's, like that's a big contender for chili. Yeah.
And I love to sit in the bar. I love the atmosphere and the food's really good.
It's very.
Do I
like,
remember a Velvet Elvis in there?
It's kind of no. Thing? But it's very nostalgic. It's got a very nostalgic feel. It's a very warm, cozy vibe in there. No, it's a good. It's a good spot. It's a good spot.
Yeah.
You're thinking about dinner. I know it. I can see it on your face.
I am hungry. I want a green chili cheeseburger.
Oh, there you go. And do you have any particular dish or any particular New Mexican dish that you like your red chili on?
Well, of course, cheese enchiladas. Mm. If I'm feeling really decadent, I'll get the fried egg on top and some sour cream.
There you go.
You can't get it anywhere else, really. I've lived in a number of places, and it's never the same.
Right. Well, we definitely appreciate your time on the podcast. There is a lot that goes into providing, you know, water and sewer service to the city. So definitely grateful for the employees and for the team that you guys have to get us the water. You know what I mean? So it's... very much appreciated.
One of those things I think we don't really think about until we have to, and so I'm glad we're thinking about it and talking about it, and we appreciate all the work you do so we can have this water bottle full of water to drink.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to What's Up ABQ, the podcast dedicated to the lovers and livelihoods of the Duke City. Now in our seventh season, we bring you the voices of the people in Albuquerque that make this place a great place to live. If you have someone or something that we should know about and feature in an upcoming episode, drop us a line on our website, whatsupabq.com. And please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for checking in, and don't miss the next episode of What's Up ABQ.